Did you know that babies are born with around 300 bones, while adults have 206 bones? How is that possible? Apparently, a newborn's bones are very flexible to allow for being squished in the cramped space inside the womb and to be able to withstand the journey through the birth canal. As the child grows, some of the bones will eventually fuse together and strengthen until there are only 206 of them. Pretty wild, right? Welcome to the Kim Wilkes Podcast. We are going to address the elephant in the audio waves right now. First thing, we're back. After a considerable break from the podcast. If I'm being honest, I did not expect to take such a long break. I had outlines and calendars and content all lined up, and in my mind, I was only going to be gone for a month or so. But then other life events took priority, and the podcast had to simmer on the back burner just for a beat. So that's the story that I want to delve into with you today. But before we do that, I will say that I think this break was definitely for the best. And it allowed me to really figure out what I want this podcast to be and how I want to reset the vibe a little bit to really be more conversational and chill and let this be a place where you can come to relax and spend some time with me as a friend who likes to talk about deep and serious stuff sometimes. I am really proud of the first season of this podcast and that I was able to do a series focused solely on healing from sexual abuse. It has been so incredible hearing from those of you who have reached out to tell me how those episodes affected you or helped you, or that it was just freeing to hear the topic spoken about openly. And we will continue to touch on healing from abuse in future episodes, because obviously it is something I'm constantly still figuring out myself. But I want to broaden the scope of the Kim Wilkes podcast a bit so that I don't have to be hyper-focused on sexual abuse all the time. I plan to talk about whatever happens to be on my mind because this is my show, and I can do that. And when I polled you about it on Instagram a while back, you all said you'd be down for hearing more about other aspects of my life. So we are all going to enjoy this ride together and see where it takes us. So with that little disclaimer out of the way, let's jump into today's story right after a word about our sponsor. I have had a lot going on in my personal life during our break, including an entire pregnancy, and now figuring out how the heck to handle the day-to-day as a mom of two. So I feel it only appropriate to kick things off with my birth story. Spoiler alert, things did not go as smoothly as the birth of my first daughter. You know how some people adore babies? They see one and feel a need to hold it. They get the baby fever, and babies are a part of life that they plan for and look forward to. Well, that's never been us. When I met my husband, I felt very strongly that God wanted me to get married and that there was a spirit waiting to come and join our family. So my husband and I both value family, and we knew vaguely that we wanted to have kids, but neither of us fully appreciated what that would be like until our first daughter was born. We adored her, but were happy to hold off on trying for more kids. One felt like plenty, but God always has higher plans, and I had this nagging feeling that there was another spirit waiting for us. Eventually, my husband felt it too, and early on the morning of Christmas Eve 2020, I found myself holding a positive pregnancy test. My first pregnancy hadn't been that bad as far as symptoms go. I was just really tired all the time, and I figured this pregnancy would be the same. But I was sorely mistaken. It only took a few weeks for terrible, constant nausea to set in. Extreme food aversions and cravings, headaches, low energy, and back pain piling on not long after. Second trimester came and went, and all of the symptoms remained, at which point I just settled in to feeling super uncomfortable for the remainder of the 9 months. At the end of season one, I did an episode on hypnobirthing, because that's what I used during my first pregnancy and birth. So I pulled out my hypnobirthing book and playlist again this time around, and I set aside time most days to do the meditations. But I also found myself wanting to learn about everything that could happen during birth, which I'd avoided during my first. The Bundle Birth YouTube channel became my favorite way to pass the time when I wasn't doing physical therapy to address my back pain or trying to get food down because my doctor wanted me to gain some weight. Not to mention taking care of my toddler, but that is just a constant of my life now. By the time my due date was approaching, I was so ready to get the baby out of me. I had really reached the end of my physical and emotional rope with being pregnant. A week and a half before my due date, I had my doctor do a membrane strip to see if that would move things along. It didn't, but we did another one 2 days before, and it did result in some bloody show later that day. We took a family walk, hoping to get things going, and while I felt a lot of abdominal pressure and discomfort, there were no contractions. Still, it was enough to keep me from sleep until 5 a.m. when it finally subsided a bit. When I got up at 9 a.m. and started to move around, the pressure came back. At 10 a.m., I decided to do the Miles circuit, which is basically a series of positions and stretches that have been shown to help engage the baby's head and the pelvis to put pressure on the cervix, which in turn aids in dilation. So about an hour later, by 11 a.m., I was feeling some contractions, and I felt like the best thing to do was to relax and see if they'd keep up, to see if this was, you know, actually labor. So I got into a warm Epsom salt bath, and I did my hypnobirthing meditations. By noon, we had everyone on call, and I did our final checklist items to get the house ready and our bags ready before going to the hospital. I paced around the house and tracked the timing and intensity of the contractions. Around 1 p.m., things were close and intense enough that I decided we should go. My first birth progressed fairly quickly, and since statistically secondary births go even faster, I had already established with my doctor that I should come in while we could still be on the safe side and I wouldn't get stuck pushing my baby out in the car. I checked into triage at 2:30 p.m. My temperature and heart rate were normal. The monitors showed steady contractions, and when they checked my cervix, I was 2 centimeters dilated, which means there had been no change since my OB appointment 2 days earlier. I was surprised, but not worried, because I knew I was having steady contractions and figured things would take off any minute. The triage nurses called my OB to see what she wanted to do, and she also felt that once things got going, I would progress very quickly, so she wanted them to keep me monitored and keep her updated. While I was lying on the bed, all strapped up, the contractions started getting more intense, and the breaks between got even shorter. Soon I found myself feeling parched, and the nurse came in because my heart rate and the baby's heart rate had suddenly elevated. She took my temperature and found I had a fever. She checked my cervix again, but still no change. Before long, someone came to find a vein in my arm for a blood draw to rule out infection and an IV to help the progressing dehydration. But on the first few attempts, my veins kept shriveling away from the needles, so 4 pokes in, they still couldn't get any spot to work. They brought in an ultrasound machine for the veins, but still had trouble. They gave me a short break, and by this point, hours had passed, and my OB called to see what was going on. She asked them to check me again for dilation, but I was still 2 centimeters. They gave the ultrasound another try, and were able to get a needle in the arm, finally, and get the blood drawn, and they hooked up my IV. It was in the most uncomfortable spot in the crook of my right elbow, but I knew I needed the IV, and I was just grateful they finally got one in. I was struggling. I couldn't understand how my contractions could be so intense and right on top of each other with so much time passing and to have no change in my cervix. I was getting exhausted, and it was only the beginning of what I knew now would likely be a long labor. At 5 p.m., my doctor told the nurses to admit me. She still held that some switch was going to flip and that the baby would come flying out. It felt good to move to our own room. The bed there was slightly comfier. I wanted to walk around and use gravity to engage the baby, and the staff were all on board with my plan and my desire for an unmedicated vaginal birth. My nurse told me they just needed to get a 10-minute reading with me hooked up to the monitor to make sure the baby was okay, since we both had elevated heart rates. Then I'd be able to get up and do whatever I want for an hour or so before they'd need another reading. She began to hook me up, and as soon as she'd placed the monitor for the baby would move. So we'd adjust the monitor, and after a few minutes, the baby would move again. So I ended up being stuck in the bed, readjusting the monitors again and again and again to try to get a solid reading. During all of this, the contractions continued to come one after the other. I had to breathe through every single one, and all cervical exams showed zero change. 8 p.m. rolled around, and the resident assigned to me came in to discuss options. They were all perplexed as to how I could have such steady contractions and no change in dilation after so many hours, and as a second-time mom. The fact that my temperature and heart rate were high pointed to the possibility of infection, which they were still waiting for the labs to rule out. But that meant that they wanted to help get the baby out sooner rather than later to avoid the baby becoming distressed or infection spreading to her. That said, they wanted to support my desires and all of my preferences for an unmedicated delivery. So they presented the option of using a Cook catheter. Now, from binging all those episodes of the Bundle Birth YouTube videos, I was familiar with the idea of this little rubber device. Essentially, it is a little squishy tube they use to put pressure on both sides of the cervix. The idea is to mimic the pressure of the baby's head against the cervix that generally helps the cervix to dilate and to open. And so a part of it goes up into the vagina and past the cervix to where the baby's head should be, and they fill that up with water like a water balloon. Then they create a second water balloon to put pressure on the other side so that the cervix is getting squished between these two water balloons. In my head, this sounded like an easy way to hopefully stimulate dilation and get things moving, because obviously I just wanted the baby out of me. Well, the actual insertion and filling process was no big deal. Maybe that was just because I'd already done membrane sweeps and a bunch of cervical exams. One more doctor reaching up there didn't bother me as much as it probably would have during my first birth experience. The nurse asked me if I wanted any pain medication, and I declined. I was fine. About 5 minutes later, things got very intense, very fast. The contractions were still coming strong every couple of minutes, and now with all the extra pressure, I was really hurting and struggling to keep my composure while I would ride each wave. It was so different than anything I'd experienced in my first birth, and despite all my preparations, I felt completely overwhelmed. Throughout all of this, my husband was sitting next to me, trying to comfort me and supporting my decisions, and I think he knew things were really bad when I told him I was open to just getting a C-section if it would mean this all could end. He knew how passionate I was about having another unmedicated birth and all the preparations I'd been doing. So after an hour of struggling and contemplating how to proceed, the nurse came back to check on me, and I asked what my pain medication options were. I'd assumed that an epidural or a cesarean were the only two options besides going totally unmedicated. But the nurse told me that since I still hadn't dilated past 6 centimeters, that she could administer a pain medication through my IV to help me stay comfortable. I was very happy to avoid a giant needle in my back and agreed. I don't think I've ever been so relieved in my entire life as I was when those meds took effect. I could still feel that I was contracting, but it became more like background noise, and I was able to quiet my mind and relax my limbs and to sleep. The meds were administered around 10 p.m., and I slept on and off until they came to check on the Cook catheter at 3:45 a.m. It fell right out, which meant that I'd finally dilated, and I was at 5 centimeters. That meant I had more decisions to make. With the risk of infection still in mind, the doctor asked how I wanted to proceed. I opted to take a few hours to walk around and see if I could get things moving again on my own. I finally got unhooked from the monitors and was able to go sit on the toilet and on a birthing ball and to mentally prepare for this last stretch before I'd be able to push the baby out. I was so happy that things were finally moving along, and it was around this time that the meds wore off, so I eased back into the intensity of the contractions, which were more manageable now that the pressure of the Cook catheter was gone. And so, a side note, while I'm so glad that this Cook catheter, or another name is a Folly balloon, that this whole method worked, I never want to need to use one again. Because the intensity of discomfort it created while I tried to labor without the meds was excruciating. Anyway, at some point, I ended up on my back in the bed because I'd been contracting for about 18 hours straight and was so, so tired. Thankfully, I kept progressing, and around 8 a.m., I was at 10 centimeters, and I could feel the baby moving down. They called my OB to come right away and asked me to try not to push, as if that was something I could actually control. I did my best, but the fact is that when the baby is ready, the body will push all on its own. So when I felt myself bearing down, I just started saying, "She's coming. She's coming right now." And they got the on-call doctor in there to catch the baby. It turns out the baby girl wanted to be just like her big sister because she was born at exactly the same time to the minute, 8:36 a.m. The umbilical cord was wrapped twice around her neck and once more around her shoulder and torso, but the doctor unwrapped her and she cried out just fine. They laid her on me for a minute, but once the cord was cut, I had the nurses wrap her up and hand her to my husband, who went and sat with her in the rocking chair while I took a minute to catch my breath. That's when my OB came running in and was so mad that she missed it. But she was able to help me deliver the placenta, which she did by telling me I was going to absolutely hate her for a few minutes, and then using her hands to very firmly press down the uterus. It sucked, but I'm glad she's so good at what she does because the placenta came out in a few different chunks. And I do not even want to think about how awful it would have been if we hadn't gotten it all out. I got some food and drinks and then finally held my new baby girl. She latched onto the breast like a champ. After 9 months of suffering and 20 hours of extreme pain, she was finally in my arms. I've got a lot of questions for God about why this is the way things are designed, because there just has to be a better way to bring children into the world that doesn't require women to suffer so much. But the only answer I've come up with so far is that there is a balance in all things. And in order for the joy of looking into an infant's eyes to be balanced, the suffering must exist as a counterbalance. The months following this birth came with their own challenges, but we'll wrap up this episode here. Ever since my first pregnancy, I've come to love hearing people's birth stories, so I hope you're able to enjoy this one. Talk more next time. Thank you so much for listening to the Kim Wilkes podcast. I would love it if you followed the podcast wherever you listen and shared it with your friends. You can find me on Instagram at kimwilkes.co to stay up to date until our next episode.